This week we're starting with
a wee review.
That's right.
A nice wee review.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Speaking of very good, it's called Very, Very Good. It's got 5 stars there. And it goes on to say, the most amazing podcast to listen to as the world falls into shambles. Smiley face.
Oh, that's one way to put it, isn't it? I mean,
look, if the world is ending, you're lucky you've got Psych Eyes by your side. Just picturing like an apocalyptic film where the goal is to find the last surviving iPhone that has all the Psych Eyes downloaded on it.
We put one episode onto a cassette. Yeah. And the quest is to find the one cassette with the one Psy Guys episode.
Wow.
I don't know. Do you know Harry Potter where during the Resistance they've got that radio show that they're doing? I feel like that's what we do during an apocalypse.
Potter Watch.
Potter Watch. We're hunkered down, right? we're on some like
what would your nickname
radio.
Be? Oh. What's your nickname?
I mean, if J.K. Rowling wrote it. the rest of the review goes on to say very distracting, makes me stop thinking of Captain Clementine and RBG dying along with our rights. Anyway, very soothing to listen to, would recommend 10 out of 10 to fall asleep to.
What a heavy review.
It was very heavy. You saved it by the end,
there
so
we go.
Perfectly fine. Why don't we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Psy Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jemp, and Luke Cutforth.
Hello!
This week, we're talking about something that might drive you just a little bit mad.
Well, drive you a bit mad.
Yeah, drive me a bit mad. Luke, why don't you demonstrate for us?
Well, so look, hands up. Usually I don't know the topics of this podcast, but Corey told me to bring a snack to the podcast for the first time ever. Wait, and I knew exactly what we're talking about.
Did you
today.
Spoil the episode before we began recording? Is that what you're saying?
He literally did. In the text chat, he literally spoiled it when I asked him to bring snacks.
Okay, so I know Corey has this thing and he asked me to bring snacks. So, Corey, are you prepared?
I don't want to do this.
If you don't like the sound of eating, then turn down your volume for roughly 10 seconds now.
Oh.
He is very uncomfortable.
Stop. Oh my God, stop. Stop.
If I just turn your volume. You've taken your headphones off.
I can't deal with, no. Oh, that was horrible.
I'm still going.
You're still going. Okay, I'll try some more.
I need my mouth full.
Right.
Sorry, it was like the noise.
Oh God.
Okay. Okay, just for you, Corey, I won't finish my snack.
Please don't. Oh my God. So if you didn't enjoy those sounds and if you turned it down, I would recommend going back and listening to it because it's a very quick test for you to see if what we're talking about today also affects you. Guys, do you know what we're talking about?
Misophonia.
Misophonia. Right. I didn't know it had a name.
It does have a name. Yeah. So misophonia. Do you guys know what misophonia is? Do you have like a definition of it? Jamp, do you know, maybe?
Something to do with like a physical reaction to the sound of chewing or mouth sound. Is it specifically chewing or just anything
Well, that's
body
the thing.
Related?
We'll get into it. So it's not necessarily just anything body related, but I think probably the main one is sort of chewing and mouth sounds and people eating and all those horrible things that everyone should really hate, to be perfectly honest. God, I feel awful. I don't know why I decided to do that.
I'm proud of you, Corey.
I just... Do you
Face
know
your
what?
Fears.
I genuinely feel right now a little bit triggered. I don't know why I did that. Like, I feel so on edge. Like, I'm worried it's going to happen again. So if you...
I do have more snacks.
Don't
so.
You dare, please.
Maybe we should have done this at the end of the episode. Probably would have been better.
So if that, if you had any adverse reactions to Luke's chewing right there, I'm shivering just thinking about it again, then you might have, misophonia. So the word comes from the Greek, miso, which means misos, which means hate, and phony, which means voice. So it means the hatred of sounds.
Hang on, if miso means hate, does that mean that miso soup is hate soup?
I was just thinking because we've got like miso paste.
Yeah, that's true because Greek...
Hate paste.
Because the Japanese language is definitely derived from Greek.
I don't know my history. Come on, Luke. Back to classics in year 7. Come on.
Eurocentrism for you, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, the entire continent of Asia.
So now Japan is the entire continent of Asia, Luke. Wow.
Oh, God, Corey, don't make... I'll start chewing again. Oh, don't... No. Oh, no. I will. Don't do that. I'll do it.
Okay. So, So, yeah.
I have so much power over Corey now. Sorry, I shouldn't use your phobias against you. That's very wrong.
Yeah, no, don't, please.
Is it a phobia or is it a phone? Like, is phonia a thing? So that's distinct from a phobia.
So phonia just means sound. Phobia means fear. So right, phonia, okay. Yeah. So it's not really a phobia, but there are, I'll get into it. There is a phobia that's kind of related to it.
Okay.
So misophonia or misophonia, basically every single patient, every single person that sort of has this, they're unique. Really. So
we're all unique, Corey.
Yeah, we are all unique, Luke. Blah, blah, blah,
my
blah,
mom
blah.
Says I'm special.
Yes, you're very special. The point being that obviously you can't say, okay, misophonia is this one specific sound. It's you don't like the sound of crunching and you have this reaction.
Right.
You know, it's any kind of sort of adverse emotional reaction. Generally, it was thought to be anger, but since that kind of definition has widened out to be sort of
discomfort,
disgust, irritation, sometimes even sadness, and fear as well is another one.
Yeah.
Which is misophobia, I think it is.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So there's a phobia in there.
Would that involve? Because I know a lot of people who are scared of the sound of balloons popping. And the potential for balloons popping. Would that come under that?
No, that wouldn't. Not really. That's okay. Kind of a different phobia. So phonophobia is the sort of subset of misophonia. So I'll get into that. I'll get into that more deeply in a little bit. But effectively, misophonia, it can start during childhood or adolescence. Generally, that's when it starts. I can definitely attest to that. There was a point where I stopped eating with my family because I couldn't.
Wow. Really?
Too much sound.
Too much going on.
Too much sound. Didn't like it. And it's this is sound bad. It's as a sort of personal experience. It's repulsive.
It's repulsive.
It's repulsive. Puts you off. Other people eating. Why would they do that? It can also be called selective sound sensitivity syndrome. You might have heard of it under that name. And you might have also heard of it as being called sound rage, which I kind of want to be the title of this episode as well.
Oh yeah, we call sound it that. Rage? Sound rage.
Yeah, sound rage. What's that?
Ooh, sounds like a festival, isn't it?
It sounds like a 90s like grunge band.
Yeah.
We are sound rage. You know.
Yeah. a hard rock festival or something. Yeah. Love it.
As I said, more recent research has kind of pointed to it being a sort of wider range of emotions, but there are also sort of physical involuntary physical reactions to it. You can mask those reactions. I say mask. You can sort of hide those reactions a bit, but it takes energy. Again, this is from personal experience, but that's also kind of there in the literature. I should say, before we get properly into this episode, that this isn't something that is incredibly well studied. Really, in the past sort of two decades, more studies have kind of started to come out about it. And that obviously puts us in a really awkward position where there aren't many large scale studies for us to look at. To be honest, I wouldn't say it's exactly the same as Tourette's, but remember how we were talking about Tourette's before and sort of suppressing a tick feels like suppressing a sneeze.
Yes.
And it's something that you can do. Yeah, you can do it, but it causes a lot of sort
it's of... like it requires a lot of emotional...
It requires energy.
Yeah,
if you're holding in a sneeze, you're like... Mm. You're not comfortable.
You're sort of moving the sneeze around your face.
You're like pushing the sneeze back into your head.
It's like, go over there.
Put that thing back where it came from, or so help me.
I was going to say, it's like trying to suck a fart back up. It's doable, but difficult.
Possible.
Back but up. That sounds like after it's come out.
No.
Like, nope.
it's at the gates, at the pearly, gates, and...
Pearly?
Yeah.
What have you been putting there?
Bleach. And then you just scoop it back in. So from a personal experience, and bear in mind, as I've said, this is something that is recognized, but the research is still in its infancy. So I will be talking a little bit from personal experience, but I will let you know when it is from personal experience. And also bear in mind, I've not been diagnosed with this, but the very fact that I can't stand eating around people.
I don't think anyone's been diagnosed with this, have they?
Well, some people have, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, and this is the thing. This is what was quite difficult with researching. There aren't really many treatments or things that are like, you know, sort of normally available. So it was very difficult to find the sources on this.
Yeah.
A lot of places were like sort of family-owned hearing clinic. We can treat your misophonia. And I'm like, can you though?
Can you though?
Mm. Really? Like, is there evidence behind that? Or is it just...
There you go, earplugs.
Stop listening. Just close your ears, silly.
Cured.
from personal experience, it's kind of like... what I did at the start of the episode was not me overacting. That was me trying to sort of hide it less. Usually, if I'm around the company of other people, I will grit my teeth and put up with it.
Oh, we've seen it because Luke cracks out the snack sometimes, you know, on this podcast.
Is it that noticeable?
I didn't know. I've been snacking for most of the time we made this podcast. I'll bring a snack sometimes. And I didn't know. I thought Corey was just like annoyed because we had to wait for me to finish snacking. I didn't realize he wanted to punch me in the face.
I don't want to punch you in the face. I just want you to stop making noise.
I just want to
noise.
Be released. My anguish.
It's not like anger. It's not really anger. It can be like that if someone keeps on doing it. But it's more disgust, you know,
right.
It's just disgust. It's like someone, you know, standing on the table, popping a squat and just letting one drop, you know, that's disgusting.
That
you don't do that on the table.
That is quite disgusting.
Why would you do
I
that?
I definitely don't do that. On the
and
table.
I'd get annoyed if you kept on doing it.
I don't do that on the podcast.
Luckily. No, not on the podcast, so, Luke,
well,
but
not yet.
As soon as we're off air, that boy is, he is not in his own house because of the quarantine. No. He is in his own house for a completely different reason.
I
have to hire a cleaner every week.
Every single week. I mean, she was making some serious money. That's where the Patreon
know,
money was going. That
I know.
Cleaner.
Paid by the hour as well. She was making bank.
So yeah, as I've said, there are sort of physical reactions. So some people can report physical pressure building up in the chest, the desire to want to stop someone, the person from making the sound, or other autonomic reactions. So autonomic reactions are sort of involuntary reactions. Like you saw me there. Probably if you were listening, you didn't see me, but I was switching, I was throwing my body around, I was struggling against it. And yeah, it's not fun. So if you really can't stand the sound of people eating, or other sort of sounds, I'll go into those later, you might have this. So the sounds, people generally think that the sounds are sort of human-based noises, like breathing, gasping, chewing, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be that. It could be, you know, it could be finger tapping, foot tapping. It doesn't need to be like sort of mouth noises and things like that. But it could also be clock sticking, whistling. It could be the sound of a plane engine. It could be any sort of sound that just... drives you nuts. And sometimes people will mimic the sound to cancel out. There's a few ways that people have a dealing with it. Some people mimic the sound to cancel it out, which I've never done.
Clever. Should you try it? Do you want to chew along with me?
No. No, not at all. No.
Just pretend to be munching and I'll also munch.
No.
Okay, that's fine. No, I just wondered if you wanted to do an experiment.
I don't. We did the experiment and it's
horrible.
Done. No, I'm done.
We haven't tried the mimicking one. Okay. I just want to eat my snacks.
I don't want you to eat your snacks. So, yeah, so it does say here that rarely, very, like, it's not common at all that physical sort of reactions like assaulting the person making the sound happen. But basically, because patients don't know when the sound is going to happen, they could end up being anxious. I'm quite lucky. I know when the sound is going to happen. It's when people have a plate of food in front of them or, you know, some snacks.
That's a giveaway.
It's a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
You can't eat without
food.
There's
food about. Crunching is likely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. So, no, I mean, so I'm generally good on that front. But other people obviously can, if it's clock ticking, that'd be a real wind-up, wouldn't
Very
Stop.
Good.
I didn't mean that. No, so clock ticking, that would be a real wind up. So you can sort of be anxious about it. It's also, there's also the issue of you want to like avoid the noise. So a lot of people will end up sort of removing themselves from certain social situations. I have genuinely left the room when people have been eating because I don't want to have to confront them and say,
well, you said you stopped
quiet.
Eating with your family.
Oh, yeah, but like I would just eat in my room, you know.
Right.
I'd still see them.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't eat at the table.
Yeah, but
them.
Just not when they were eating.
Yeah, they were loud.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Loud noises. Oh God, I'm just thinking about my mum eating right now. It's awful. God. Sorry, Mum. You don't listen, do you? I don't know if you listen.
You've been called out for chewing.
Out of interest, I have a real strong, like stronger than I think is normal, although maybe not, reaction to people who talk with their mouth full. Like, I really get, like, angry and snappy when that happens. I'm guessing, because that actually has a genuine, like, there's a genuine reason not to eat with your mouth full, because you might, like, spit food everywhere. But
There's like social etiquette tied to that though, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me really mad.
Well, fair enough. I also don't like it when people chew with their speak with their mouth full.
Yeah.
I also don't like it when they chew with their mouth full because more food means more. No. But
chewing with your mouth empty, fine with Corey.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Yum, yum.
Chew is actually, go ahead, Luke, and chew. This is another experiment. Yum. Chew with your mouth empty.
Okay.
Yeah, that's less bad. Yeah, it's the I think it's know
the
that you're not
presence of food.
I think I know because I know that you're not eating. You're just going like, it's a little bit, but I don't feel this intense kind of like.
What about Luke's teeth tapping thing?
Oh yeah,
does that trigger it?
I think because he's not in the room, it's fine.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think when
the thing that the audience is missing, the thing the audience is missing is that is really loud.
Yeah, it's really loud. Yeah. That's the issue, I think.
I'm sorry for being the problem, guys.
You're not the problem. Okay?
Maybe the problem is just Luke.
No, don't say that to him.
It's not. I was joking.
Can he see? Oh, he can see us. Oh, never mind. Yeah. We can't use our secret code anymore. No.
We need to go back to just the webcam.
So, yeah, this is the issue. People will kind of restrict, remove themselves socially from certain situations, and it can be physically uncomfortable, it can be emotionally uncomfortable, and supposedly can lead to reduced quality of life if it's very extreme. I mean, if you think about it. Yeah, I mean, if particular noises, very particular noises, and that's the thing, these noises are incredibly specific. If those just rile you up and make you like so uncomfortable or disgusted or angry or upset, then it's very difficult to go about your normal life.
Yeah.
So
it does negatively impact the person who has misophonia.
Yeah.
Because I came into this thinking, oh, you know, you're just a bit uncomfortable with chewing. Like, get on with it, you know?
Yeah.
But if it's... get on with it. You feel a bit uncomfortable. No. But if it's causing people to want to remove themselves from social situations, then... That's a different story.
I just assumed that most people didn't like the sound. Because, you know, there's a whole thing of don't speak with your mouth full.
Why wouldn't? Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, don't chew loudly.
Vaguely relate to that.
And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, that adds up to me.
Yeah.
So I guess everyone doesn't like this. And this whoever is making noise while chewing is just incredibly rude. And I realized, oh no, I'm broken.
Yeah.
Literally, I was speaking to our friend Connie, who is not a friend of the pod. No, not at all. We don't like her. No.
What? Connie. Oh, right. Because she's not been on the podcast.
She's not been on the podcast.
Yeah, I was like, which of us hates Connie? What's going on? What the hell?
Yeah, drama James? Podcast.
I swear to
sudden.
God, honestly, someone is gonna message Connie about this and be like, Connie, these guys said that they didn't like you.
You know the Psy guys are talking trash about you on their podcast?
The
Wouldn't science
be the first
of
time?
Hating Connie.
Hypothesis. James hates Connie.
My thesis.
Yeah, so it was actually Connie that put me onto this. I was like,
Connie gave you misophonia. That's so insensitive.
Well, I was sitting, I was messaging her one day and we were chatting. I think someone was making a loud noise while this was back when the world was open. So I was outside and someone was making a loud noise eating. I was just messaging. I was like, oh man, this is winding me up. She was like, oh, you might have this. And I'm like, oh yeah. But you know, like I went into it more. I was like, you know, it's really frustrating when people eat. Do you feel me? And she was like, Corey, you definitely have this thing.
She was just like, no, that's just you.
Your brain sucks. it's not nice. And that's the thing. Like I said, it could be any sort of noise. It could be noises made by animals, sounds of engines. Seeing specific movements can also aid in that. So it's not just the sort of auditory cue. Obviously, it is built around the auditory cue. So. I think what it's saying here is essentially that seeing the sort of sound being made is also quite important,
right?
If that makes sense. I think it's probably that to me seems like it's probably to do with.
Does it annoy you more if you can see the person chewing?
No, because I can. I know that food sounds are food sounds.
Yeah,
but then
if you see someone chewing, will you, even if you can't hear it, will your brain sort of do that thing where it fills in?
No, quiet chewing is fine.
Right.
Quiet food eating is fine.
Right.
Dogs eating food, generally fine. I've had to, in the house, there are often ASMR videos of dogs eating various foods. And if I'm looking at the screen, I think it's generally fine for me.
Yeah.
But when it's people eating, I hate it so much.
That is so interesting.
It's very interesting.
It's not just the sound, and it's not And it is just the sound,
but I think the thing is that the sound needs I think you kind of probably need to understand the sound as the sound that it is, because it is only with specific sounds.
So that's what I mean, is it's the sound and the context. So like what I mean is, if you hear the sound and you can't see the dog, are you likely to feel uneasy? And then as soon as you see it's a dog in the context, it kind of goes away a little bit.
Yeah, I think I've been on edge a couple times with dogs, but then I think it's generally been fine. This is the thing. Bear in mind that, again, like I've said, I haven't been diagnosed with this thing specifically, but it's you know, if not, we're just talking about my weird eating thing.
Yes.
And also misophonia.
It'd be pretty strange if you didn't have it at this point.
It would be, right?
I'd be okay. Like, that is a real twist.
Yeah, like that'd be a total like left turn. Like genuinely reading up about this, I'm like, yeah, I feel you, bro. I feel you on this. So yeah, as I've said this many times, but let's just recap for anyone that might have got lost along the way while we're talking about other things. It doesn't need to be human sounds, and the sounds can elicit sort of any emotional response. But bear in mind, it is a specific sound. So it's not all sounds, it's just a specific set of sounds that really sort of get to a person. Yeah. So it's actually similar to this thing called, you might have heard of it, hyperacusis. Hyperacusis?
No? I have not heard of this, no.
So this is when everyday sounds sound much louder than they should. So the difference between this is that, the difference between it is the fact that hyperacusis is basically a hypersensitivity to specific frequencies and volume ranges, whereas misophonia is specific sounds, if that makes sense. So they've actually done studies where they've given people with sort of misophonia sounds at different frequencies and volume ranges, and that doesn't affect them. Like it's not necessarily the volume or the frequency of the sound, it's this whole sort of specific sound itself. So hyperacuity is ranges of frequencies and volumes, and misophonia is specific sounds like eating, chewing, car doors closing, clocks ticking, any specific sort of sound you can think of, really.
Can I ask you a question?
You can.
Does the, if you think about somebody chewing food and eating it, if you think about that fact as a concept, does that make you feel uneasy?
I'm doing it right now. No, not really.
Wow, this is so interesting.
It's odd though, because if I think about it and I'm in that mindset, I'm like, oh God, that's annoying. But right now I'm feeling quite good. So it's fine.
Okay.
We're good. You know?
Glad you're feeling good.
Yeah, I'm feeling all right. Okay. Yeah. I've bounced back from Luke's horrible torture at the start.
It's taken 25 minutes to recover.
Yeah, it's not good. But I've also mentioned phonophobia. So phonophobia is a subtype of misophonia. Basically, it's a fear of the specific sound. So
I had this with the Are You My Mummy kid in Doctor Who.
I think that's different.
So bad. I screamed and ran out of a house when someone played it. It was horrible.
But that's a little different though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's like a scary sound, you know?
Well, it's a kid going, Are You My Mummy? It's not a scary sound.
Yeah, but
it's in the context that I find it scary.
Yeah, but that's why, but then sounds aren't, so a dog, you know, a dog making a specific sound isn't scary unless, you know, it's a dangerous dog. But if all the dogs you've been exposed to are dangerous, then in the context of your life, that's scary. The Are
and
You My Mummy
fair,
thing.
All of the children in gas masks I've been interacting with have been then aliens with gas masks coming out of their face. So you are right.
So in phonophobia, the dominant emotion is fear, basically. So it would be kind of any of the same sounds, but you've got a phobia of them, an aversion to them. One could say. So I guess that's similar to the balloon popping. My mum is scared of balloons popping, but she's kind of more scared of loud noises. Like, she doesn't like fireworks.
I guess with balloons popping, it's like an element of surprise as well that you might be scared of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing is with balloons popping, like you say, and with fireworks, they are literally just explosions. So
yes, true.
There does seem to be more
reason.
It's not
that weird to be scared of explosions.
Yeah. Whereas with people just eating or smacking their lips or a clock ticking, you know, it doesn't really, there's not a sort of general, everyone understands why this is just a little bit scary sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know? You feel me?
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Just as a question, Luke, does that Are You My Mummy thing still scare you?
I think I rewatched it and I was fine. But when I think about it, I do still get a little bit of
Is it scarier in your memory?
Yeah.
Than when you watch it? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll rewatch it. It's just like, it was so scary. I used to lie in bed looking out my bedroom door thinking that either one of those gas mask children was going to come up the stairs, or one of the Christmas Santa Doctor Who episode, like these evil Christmas Santas. Yeah. One of them was going to come up the stairs and like turn and look at me, and that was it.
For me, it was the Cybermen.
For years.
Like, I didn't like the
Cybermen.
How many children has Doctor Who traumatized?
The Cybermen would be fine if it wasn't for that one Cybermen episode where they basically won and they had to go to another universe or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And like everyone got
that turned. Was oddly dark, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was too dark. People genuinely got turned into Cybermen in a horrific way. I'd never seen Doctor Who before.
It's crazy because
I sat down to watch it with some friends and I was horrified. I didn't want to be by myself.
There's an episode of Rick and Morty that ends pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
Where their universe becomes so broken that they have to go to another one.
Yeah.
Well, but it turns out that Rick's done that loads of times as well.
He's just constantly
leaving behind universes screwed up.
Guys, we finally hit peak science podcast.
We've mentioned Rick and Morty.
We've mentioned Rick and Morty.
You really have to listen to SciGuys to understand Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to.
I think our IQ just went up about 200 points.
I mean, we have been trying to make people smarter. And we've not mentioned Rick and Morty. That's funny. That's funny because he's a pickle.
Pickle Rick.
Back to misophonia.
Yeah?
Okay. Stop.
I turned myself into a pickle, Morty.
God. So, like I said, it usually begins in childhood or sort of adolescence, that sort of age. And apparently, this is from a study I read, that people often say that they start to notice it because they've got a really serious disgust for family members eating.
Do you hashtag relate?
That was me. Genuinely, I've not eaten with my family for so long.
Oh.
I can't remember the last time I sat down and had a meal with them. I get on with them very well. I just don't get on with the noises their mouths make.
Poor
family. You have a fundamental disagreement with their mouths.
Their mouths are perfectly fine. Visually,
perfectly fine.
Mm. Orally?
Good work.
so that's kind of the overview on misophonia. You guys got a good grasp of what it is?
I think so.
Yeah?
And also the difference between misophonia and phonophobia and misophobia.
Yeah.
All these different terms.
Misophobia is not a thing. It's phonophobia. Sorry.
Just phonophobia. Okay.
I misspoke.
Okay.
Or misspoke. Ha 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 ha. Because miso. Never mind.
Mr. Spoke.
Mrs. Spoke.
Mrs. Spoke.
Mrs. Spoke.
Dr. Spoke. Minister
Spoke. Reverend Spoke.
Professor Spoke. Sir Spoke.
Her Royal Highness spoke.
Archbishop. Finish that. So
General
funny.
Spoke. Okay, right. Why are we doing this bit?
Corporal Spoke.
No. We're done.
Prime Minister.
No.
It wasn't even that funny.
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't worth it, but I had a great time.
Misophonia, I hear you ask. How do we diagnose that? Well, I'll tell you, we don't. I mean, we do diagnose it. We just don't have a sort of...
I was going to say, how could we diagnose it if we haven't studied a lot on it?
We don't have really standard diagnostic principles for it, is the thing. In fact, if you were to go to your doctor and say, hello, I think I've got misophonia or misophonia, they'd be like, oh, okay, what is that?
They would laugh in your face.
They would genuinely probably would have no idea what it is. So that's the thing. In 2013... there was a large sample, 42 people with misophonia that were clinically characterized in a paper by Schroeder et al. And that was, I think I said, in 2013. So they used this to make the Amsterdam Misophonia Scale, which is a 6-item self-reporting rating scale to basically figure out the type and severity of the symptoms that you have.
Mm.
So I've sent that to both of you. I've got it here in front of me as well. So we can go through this together. And you know what? I'll tweet out a link as well if you guys like on the Twitter account.
Here we go.
We might be able to do this all together.
Okay.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah,
this
is different. Fun, right? So question number one. I mean, I can just read this out. It's just so you guys have got it in front of you. You know?
Yeah.
How much of your time is occupied by misophonic sounds? So how frequently do you think about the sounds? How often do those thoughts occur? So that goes from 0, which is none, up to 4, which is extreme. So that's greater than 8 hours a day or near constant thoughts about the sounds.
Oh my goodness.
That's like your whole waking life.
It's like a full-time job.
Literally about half the time you spend awake. So I would say, for me personally, that's probably mild. because I don't eat around anyone anymore, so I don't need to think about it. Two. What about
mine,
you guys? I assume you guys are both zero.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably zero.
So I'll just from now on, I'll just say what my answers are. Remember, they go from 0 to 4. 0 being the least extreme, 4 being the most extreme. How much do these misophonic sounds interfere with your social, work, or role functioning? Is there anything that you don't do because of them? If currently not working, determine how much performance would be affected if you were employed. So I think I would probably be moderate. So moderate is definite interference with social or occupational performance, but still manageable. When I was working in an office, my boss that sat next to me was the loudest eater in the world, and it made me want to pull my skin off.
No.
I just had to put in headphones and blast music. I've got noise cancelling headphones, and they are a godsend.
Right.
Yeah, genuinely.
What would you count? Because sometimes I get quite annoyed with the sound of people talking over each other, which sometimes happens in my office, and then I have to put headphones in and blast it. But that, I imagine that might be something different.
So you say a bit annoyed. I feel like a genuine, like, visceral disgust.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not really physical. It's more just like, this is annoying me. I need to drown it out with something.
Yeah, there are noises that annoy me or stress me out.
Yeah.
But this is a visceral sort of, like, so in my
definitely
in my
like the
gut,
physical,
in my chest.
The physical...
Yeah,
irritation.
Like, yeah. I mean, I tense up if I hear it. Mm. And I can pick that sound out. So we could be sitting watching TV. Let's say we're all in the living room. We're sitting watching TV, right? The TV's up pretty loud. I can pick that sound out of someone chewing.
Really?
Yeah. And I genuinely, sometimes I'll just stand up.
I don't think
up.
I ever notice people chewing ever.
Lucky you.
It has to be really, really loud.
Yeah, I can just hear it. I'm like, I know everyone's specific chewing sounds and I know which ones are the worst.
You know people's specific chewing sounds.
Whose is the worst?
Sorry.
Call it out.
No, I'm not.
Is it me?
No, it's not you. Well,
okay.
It depends what you're eating. But no, I know what. There's almost a scale in my head of like, oh boy, I need to avoid this person because they're about
to eat
that. I can't eat
next to this person.
It's any person. I can't eat next to any of them. No. So number three, how much distress do the misophonic sounds cause you? In most cases, distress is equated with irritation, anger, or disgust. Only rate the emotion that seems to be triggered by misophonic sounds, not generalized irritation or irritation associated with other conditions. So...
Well, again, for me, probably none.
Yes, this is the thing. I'm somewhere between moderate and severe. So that's disturbing, irritation, /anger/disgust, but still manageable, and between sort of... between that and severe, which is very disturbing, irritation, anger, or disgust.
Would severe be like when you have to remove yourself?
I think I've got to. Yeah, so I think manageable would mean I can sit and bear it.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I can, but a lot of the time I will just leave.
Nope.
Okay, so how much effort do you make to resist the thoughts about misophonic sounds? So how often do you try to disregard or turn your attention away from these sounds? Only rate the effort made to resist, not success or failure in actually controlling the thought or sound. This is interesting. So it goes from makes an effort to always resist up to completely and willing yields to all obsessions.
I don't really have anything to resist.
I'll go for a 2. Make some effort to resist. Because I'm not really sure. Number 5. How much control do you have over your thoughts about misophonic sounds? How successful are you in stopping or diverting your thinking about misophonic sounds? Can you dismiss them? So that goes from 0 to 4. I'd say 4. No control. I experience thoughts as completely involuntary, rarely able to alter thinking about misophonic sounds. Yeah, I can't.
No control.
I can't ignore it. I leave the room. I can't. Yeah. I genuinely can't ignore it. I mean, I very much struggled with the thought of putting myself through this today. And then number 6, which is the last sort of multiple choice question. Have you been avoiding doing anything, going at any place, or being with anyone because of your misophonia? How much do you avoid, for example, by using other loud sounds such as music? So, this has changed a lot because obviously no one goes outside anymore. But generally, so moderate avoidance, let's say, so that's 1 to 3 hours a day or frequent avoidance. Basically, because it's eating, it's very easy to avoid. Whenever anyone's eating, I'll just not be there. So
just eat at a different time.
Just eat at a different time.
There you go.
Lunch at work, just wear my headphones. It's
fine.
There
you go.
It's fine. And then finally, what would be the worst thing that could happen to you if you're not able to avoid the misophonic sounds? I think we watched me like really,
at the very beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, like,
there you go.
Oh, like all that. Like
punch someone in the face.
Well, no. The thing is, you don't want to ask someone, hey, can you stop making a lot
can
of noise?
You please stop chewing.
Because it comes off as being very rude. And I don't want to be rude. So I'm just like, well, I guess I'll die then. Very British, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the Amsterdam Misophonia scale. There are other scales, bear in mind, and there are some problems with this one. People have pointed out the fact that it focuses on disgust, anger, or irritation, and because we kind of come to the idea that there might be other emotional responses to it. I'm just hitting the mic here. We've come to the idea that there might be other emotional responses to it. So, you know, that gives you an idea of kind of what misophonia is like and how it's characterized and maybe diagnosed by some people.
So how many points did you get on that, Corey?
How many points did I get on that? Let's see, 14.
Okay, and what's the minimum for a diagnosis of misophonia?
It's not quite as straightforward as that. This is just a general, it just kind of generally rates how sort of your symptoms are. Obviously the maximum here would be 4 times 6, which is
24.
There you go. So I got 14, which is over half.
Ooh.
Mm.
Yeah. So not the worst, but
yeah,
not great. You know, can't imagine what it would
be
like
compared to my zero. It's
yeah,
bad,
you guys
yeah.
both have zero, and I have 14. So yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's not like you fill out these surveys and instantly you've got a diagnosis. It's like when you go to the doctor and they give you the
submit the survey to your GP. It's like, here you go. Here's the proof.
Here's the diagnosis for you. It's like when you go to the doctor and they give you the sort of here's your depression and anxiety sheet to fill out to see if you have that, and then we'll talk to you about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just it gives you a general idea of where you might be, and that's the thing. It doesn't really capture the entirety of misophonia, because again, it's evolving, so we're still kind of trying to figure things out, and obviously things will get better in terms of diagnosis as we go on. And to be fair, it's generally it can be quite severe, but as far as disorders go, or as far as things like this go, it's not necessarily the absolute worst, given that you can usually manage it just by wearing headphones. Obviously there are situations where you can't do that and where headphones are not easy to come by, but because you can just block out sounds, generally it is somewhat manageable without medical intervention. In fact, a lot of people don't even realize that they've got it, you know, or that it's a thing
it's
that you can
enough,
have.
Yeah. Probably just think it's a bit annoying.
Yeah. Just think that everyone else is crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like they think maybe everyone experiences the same thing.
Yeah. Just everyone sitting there seething and no one else is going to say anything.
But no one talks about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like how everyone is psychic and no one talks about it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't even say
that.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. I thought so. Yeah. I actually,
I know you thought so.
That is genuinely one of that was genuinely something that used to make me anxious.
You knew that he knew that.
Oh, about actual mind readers.
Well, this is the thing. I was like, if everyone in the world was able to read minds, they would know that I was the only one that wasn't. So they would just pretend that I like they wouldn't want to make me feel bad. So they would just pretend that none of them could.
So and you can't prove that's not the case.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah, and it really bothers me. So as I said, you've got the sort of anger, you've got the disgust, all of those different emotions, you've got the physical reactions. But you might be thinking, this sounds a little bit similar to other things. Do you think that?
I wasn't thinking that.
You weren't thinking that.
I wasn't thinking that. No,
I don't think there's anything else where someone chews something and you want to beat them up.
No, I don't like you making it out as though I want to beat people up. I don't. I just think they're disgusting and should be stopped.
and you're the one to stop them.
No, I'd rather someone else stop them. So
you don't have to go near the chewing.
I specifically don't ask people to stop because I don't want to confront them.
That's because you're polite.
I don't want to be a nuisance. Yeah.
I simply can't be a nuisance. No, dear me. No, so the thing is that there are some sort of comorbidities that have been sort of found. I think this was originally sort of found when studying tinnitus. You guys know what tinnitus is?
It's like the ear ringing.
Yeah,
thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that ringing, the ringing that people have in their ears, sort of constant thing. Really, really not very good to deal with. So there are other things that we found sort of connections with it too. Bear in mind, all of these are from quite small scale studies, so these connections could be nothing. These are correlations.
Mm-hmm.
They're not causal connections necessarily.
Yeah,
they're again from small sample sizes. So if we expand it out to a massive sample size of the world, we might not see that same sort of connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we find apparently, so some studies have found that apparently difficulties with emotion regulation and neuroticism might be risk factors for this. So, you know, if you have a difficulty controlling your impulses or you have difficulty controlling your behavior when distressed, that might actually be a risk factor for developing misophonia, which makes sense. Obviously if you've got some kind of disorder wherein you've got difficulty with emotion or impulse regulation, it makes sense that these impulses, when you hear a specific stimulus, are going to take over you a little bit.
Yeah.
On top of that, apparently 60% of patients with tinnitus also have misophonia, and 86% of tinnitus patients have hyperacusis, which is the one I mentioned earlier, which is sort of more blanket version of misophonia, if that's the easiest way of thinking about it.
Where everything's louder.
Where things of specific like frequencies or volumes feel.
So it's like hypersensitivity.
Yeah, it is kind of like a hypersensitivity. Yeah, and that's the thing. Misophonia is also can also be described as kind of a hypersensitivity to very specific sounds.
Mm.
And this is difficult. It's difficult to tell sort of people who have hyperacusis and just hyperacusis and people who have just misophonia and people who have just tinnitus, because they're, while they are quite different things, it's because it's not very well studied, it's very difficult to discern that from the current data.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to this is one of the things from the study that won the Ig Nobel Prize. So I'm just going to list off some things that we found people with misophonia also might have had. So mood disorders, 7.1%. People that they studied had mood disorders. Tourette syndrome, 4.8%. ADHD, 4.8%. Trichotillomania, which is where you pull your hair out, was 4.8%.
Trichotillomania.
Trichotillomania. I never read it out loud. Do you know when you see a word and you skim over it in your head, you're like, I know what that word means.
I leave some syllables out.
I will never need to say it out loud. I just won't. I just, yeah, so say it again, Luke.
Trichotillomania?
4.8%. Skin picking, 2.4%. Panic disorder, 2.4%. Hypochondria, 2.4%. And apparently, DSM Axis 1 Obsessive Compulsive Disorder was diagnosed in 2.4% of the subjects, but more than half of the sample that they looked at, which was, I think, around about 40-ish people, met the diagnostic criteria for Axis 2 Obsessive Compulsive Personality Disorder. So that was about 52.4% of them met that. So there's, from this, and again, small sample size, but there is potentially some relation between disorders of compulsion and misophonia, which makes sense because there are sort of like autonomic responses to specific input. Mm. Input? A specific...
Stimulus.
Okay. So these people... basically suggested that misophonia should be its own thing, which we'll get into just in just a little bit. But of 52, if 52 misophonia sufferers in another study, so 30 were women and 22 were men, the most common comorbid symptom, which just means two diseases at once or multiple diseases at once, the most common comorbid symptoms reported by the people who had misophonia were PTSD in 15%, OCD in 11%, and I think that's major depressive disorder in 9.61%. Oh, and anorexia in 9.61% as well.
So does that, I mean, so obviously this is a jump I'm making, but I was actually wondering earlier on, like, whether this was something that, where like the current thought on it was that this was something genetic, like we're born with it, or developmental, or trauma-based, or like, is there any kind of suggestion that it's any of those, or a mix of them all?
Lucky for you, Luke, we've just moved on to the next section, which is potential mechanisms.
Yay! I love potential mechanisms.
So yeah, that's the thing. We don't know very much about this at all, so it would all be speculation, and anything I say in this, again, speculation. Some of it is based on data, but the data isn't solid because small sample sizes. I'm going to say that many, many times. I don't want you guys taking this away and thinking...
Basically, we need more studies with more people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I don't want you guys taking this away and thinking, hey, this is exactly how it works, and we've definitely figured this out, and we've got really solid proof behind it. It's all kind of in a little bit of a state of flux right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, to talk about that, really, we don't really know the exact cause of it. So from what I can glean from the information that I've looked at, it seems that it's not necessarily a genetic disorder. It's more a case of potentially something that happens during development. So sort of something that you acquire. But then given that, you know, there are quite a few sort of compulsive disorders that are related to these to misophonia, or people that have misophonia have also been meet the diagnostic criteria for compulsive disorders. You could say that potentially those are risk factors, and misophonia is sort of comes from that, wherein,
or they have a common cause.
Yeah, or they have a common cause. You could say that. Again, small sample sizes, it's very difficult to say anything concrete. I'm really going out on a limb when I even so much as speculate on that. So, I mean, if you want what I think, and bear in mind, I am by no means an expert, so what I think carries very little weight. But what I think, it seems to be some kind of compulsive disorder or something along those lines, that's triggered by some kind of sound. And we'll talk a little bit about where that might come from. So there are some mechanisms. Basically, sound, information about sound, like, you know, sound, auditory information, goes into your brain through two pathways. So two parallel pathways. There's a non-classical and the classical auditory pathways. And essentially, they're just slightly different. They slightly differ from each other. It doesn't really matter why for this. But the fact is that they both interact with the limbic system, which is, do you guys know what the limbic system is?
Ooh, not off the top of my head, no.
Luke, do you know?
I can't remember.
It's kind of the system that sort of moderates autonomic responses, sort of like involuntary.
Oh, like when you touch a flame.
That is what, that's a reflex, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a reflex. So this is the thing. Where do you guys think that the problem with misophonia lies? Like, you know, obviously you hear a sound and it travels through, you know, sort of the normal sound pathway to your brain.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, there is an issue.
It gets corrupted.
Yeah, well, and it causes you know, involuntary responses and those bad feelings. Where do you think that might come from? Where do you think that might come in? At what point?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like it's coming from the limbic system, as you just described it.
Yeah?
If it's an involuntary response, and then you, the rest of the brain, is trying to sort of downregulate that response. It's trying to, like, hold back from it.
So this is this is the thing. Yeah, you're pretty much right. So I was kind of leading you into saying that misophonia, people with misophonia have normal hearing sensitivity, which, yeah, that's basically what you're saying right there. It's not in your hearing. So people with misophonia don't have necessarily an issue with the sounds that are coming in. It's more where they're being processed. At least what I gather from the studies I've read. They've done some studies where they've done MRIs that showed sort of responses in the brain to certain sounds. And this is the thing. It's interesting. We don't have a specific mechanism for how it works, but we're pretty certain that hearing sensitivity is generally normal. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere there's some kind of crosswire somewhere else along the way. And there are other sort of mechanisms for how it can be acquired, sort of thing. So there's associative and non-associative learning. Do you guys know what those are? You should know what at least one of them is.
Is it where you make associations and that's how you learn?
Well, yeah, kind of. So there's two kinds of learning. There's associative and non-associative learning. So it's kind of, there's the idea that misophonia could be a kind of conditioned behavior wherein you associate the sound with something negative, and that results in a consistent negative response from that sound. So that could be one particular that's one idea for how it works. But there's also the idea of non-associative learning, which results in habituation or sensitization. So the symptoms of misophonia could come from sensitized connections or shortcuts between the limbic auditory and autonomic nervous systems.
Right.
So basically, it's kind of like the idea that as I've read it, there's overlaps in auditory signals and emotions, which makes a more complex neural signal, and that can result in misophonia.
Right.
So if it's like associative learning, does that mean that the suggestion is that at some point in your, I don't really necessarily understand associative learning very well, but does it mean that at some point in your life you had some association between eating and a bad thing? Like something,
well, not necessarily.
Like, no.
Well, that sound at some point could have been associated with something disgusting,
or so something bad was happening.
Happened. Not necessarily. Yeah. No, it could just be. Okay. You could have been disgusted by that sound at some point, and this is the thing. It can compound over time, if you know what I mean. Like, if you are a little bit disgusted by that, and you hear that, it disgusts you.
So does that mean that you can use exposure therapy to lessen it?
Well, this is the thing. There aren't many therapies out there because it's not very well understood, but one of them is, I have read that people have used exposure therapy to try and help it. I don't know how effective that is, though.
You could try it. You could expose yourself to the sounds of Luke eating snacks on the podcast every week.
No.
This is a win-win.
A scientific experiment.
You treat the misophonia and Luke gets to eat snacks on the podcast. There you go.
No, I think not. I don't think we'll be doing
that. No, okay.
Your commitment to science has its limits.
So, sorry, just to clarify, I think I got the limbic system and the autonomic system mixed up a little bit earlier. So the limbic system is actually a set of structures in the brain that deal with emotions and memory, and the autonomic system is the one that deals with involuntary stuff like the.
So the limbic system would be responsible for like the feelings of disgust or irritation.
I assume so. Yeah.
And then the
autonomic system.
Autonomic system is to do with the.
It's more involuntary stuff.
Yeah, the involuntary reaction so behind it.
Essentially, there the two sort of trains of thought that we've got going on here are associative learning and non-associative learning. Associative learning, very simply put, is disgusted by a disgusting noise, or something disgusting is associated with the sound that triggers the misophonia. So let's say it's clock ticking. At some point, there could have been something that made someone very frustrated or angry, or caused a specific emotional response, or that caused a very strong emotional response while the clock was ticking. Those sounds got associated. Non-associative learning is more about sort of, I guess the simplest way to put it, from what I've read, seems to be sort of wires being crossed. So sort of basically, if you think about it, sort of as a misfiring, there's a really
like the sneeze reflex.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you mean with photic sneezing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably be something like that. Yeah. So I mean, this is the thing. It's very difficult to understand. Some people have related it kind of to Tourette. Some people have related it to sort of compulsive disorders like OCD or obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. There's some evidence that's in very very early stages that supports the idea that the underlying mechanism could be due to sensitization, which is which we've spoken about just a little bit. And that's the thing. It's very difficult to know where we are with this, because we are at the very forefront of this, of the study of this. So sensitization is the increased neuronal activity in response to a stimulus. Basically, your brain does more than it should when something happens. Really?
Right. Okay.
You know? So the Ig Nobel Prize, you guys might remember we've spoken about the Ig Nobel Prize on SciGuys Live before. You should watch SciGuys Live every second Sunday. We spoke about how people in 2020 won the medicine award for studying misophonia. So those people were Arjun Schroeder, Nienka Vulink, and Damien Dennis. So what they did was they studied 42 patients who had misophonia, and they interviewed them, and they basically adapted a version of different versions of sort of misophonia diagnostic techniques to sort of interview them and figure out what their experiences were. They also had them speak to a psychiatrist. And they had a similar pattern of symptoms in which auditory or visual stimuli provoked an immediate aversive physical reaction with anger, disgust, and impulsive aggression. And the intensity of the emotions caused basically obsession with the noise. Or the visual stimulus. And then it can also cause avoiding it and social dysfunction and suffering. So basically all of these people would want to avoid things or be basically confrontational by asking people to stop making a noise. And it ended up causing them like sort of distress, like emotional distress.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the thing. They couldn't classify the symptoms under anything else in the DSM. So the conclusion and the reason they won the Ig Nobel Prize, because it's a bit funny to do a study on people who don't like the sound of eating, but so long as you're not one of the people that doesn't like the sound of eating. But
well, that was the thing, is when they announced this, one of the guys on the team was deliberately eating loudly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was very weird.
It was funny. Not gonna lie. I thought it was, I was watching it in 2x speed, so it wasn't that much of an issue, but it was quite funny.
It's funny, sure. But it also was like, man, if anyone's going to be a little bit like empathetic towards these people, it might have been you.
We have found a new treatment for photosensitive epilepsy. This is what it is. This is the new treatment.
That's a funny joke.
Oh god.
It's an awful dear. Thing to yeah, do. It's
a terrible thing to do.
So the conclusion was, the thing that they suggested was that it should be classified as its own psychiatric disorder. And obviously, moving forward, we should try and figure out diagnostic criteria so that, you know, we could improve sort of our diagnosis of it, identify it better, and develop treatments, because it really bothers some people. Makes their lives not very fun. And they suggested specifically that it should be considered as an obsessive compulsive spectrum disorder. And they've got, because they've got common symptoms of being obsessive, obviously, having compulsions or impulsivity. And they also share similarities in the sort of the patients that have them, the treatment response, how the brain kind of deals with it. They're all quite similar. So they've basically said we should classify it as this, an obsessive compulsive spectrum disorder. That's the thing. We were talking about this earlier about how people who had hypochondria, Tourette syndrome, OCD, OCPD, or skin picking, or hair pulling, it was kind of comorbid a little bit with that, or at least from their sample size, that's what they saw. So again, they've come to the conclusion that it should be classified as an obsessive compulsive spectrum disorder. And that's the thing. That's what they won the Ig Nobel Prize for, which I think is quite interesting.
Very nice.
And hopefully, you know, it might be added to the DSM. If it is, and I find out, we'll do a little update at some
point. Hopefully soon.
I mean, I don't really mind.
Don't you?
Well, I don't care. I mean, for other people, maybe. I don't really mind. Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, the treatment options... Well, that's the thing. We're about to talk about the treatments now. So there isn't a known cure. But what do you guys think might be some treatment options for this? Luke, you've got any ideas?
We talked about
exposure therapy.
Yeah, exposure therapy. We mentioned that briefly.
There is exposure therapy, yeah. So anything else on top of that?
Maybe deliberately, if you have a theory about how it might have come about, for example, if it was like a non-associative learning, like you could do some kind of reward treatment. I suppose that's kind of exposure therapy. But like if it's like basically an upregulated thing, oversensitivity, you try and downregulate it.
Yeah.
From my very limited understanding.
Well, yeah. So this is the thing. Like I said, sources on this aren't great because it's not very well researched, but this is what I picked up. There's something called tinnitus retraining therapy, which I've had a bit of a look into, and also CBT. So tinnitus retraining therapy and CBT at the same time tinnitus retraining therapy and CBT have apparently been decent. But bear in mind, a lot of this is case by case, essentially anecdotal. There's not been a broad study on this. So TRT basically combines counseling and acoustic therapy to sort of reduce the annoyance or awareness of tinnitus. And that can be used with misophonia. So it says here that acoustic enrichment can be implemented with white noise generators, hearing aids, or a combination device, which is a noise generator and a hearing aid in a single unit. So this is for tinnitus, but you can obviously adapt this treatment to work a little bit for misophonia. So the idea here is that the counseling is a really big part of it, and it addresses sort of the way that you feel about the sort of stimulus, the emotional reactions, and the ways that it affects your sort of cognition. And basically, you basically educate the person and talk them through it. It's kind of a little bit like exposure therapy, but also it can, so from what I can read here, it can kind of like distract you a little bit from the noise and make it easier for you to not have such a strong reaction to it. Mm. So that's apparently quite good. CBT can be helpful, obviously, just dealing with the responses themselves. But ultimately, there's not really anything that helps fully, that is supposed to fully get rid of it, at least from what I've read, which is really, really frustrating, but also interesting, because we're really at the forefront of this, and at any point we could come up with some kind of treatment that is groundbreaking and actually really, really helps people deal with this. I mean, if we figure out exactly how it works, then we'll be in the clear, basically. So that's a little bit about that. There's not really any treatments. The thing that the people that won the Ig Nobel Prize said, we'll just end on this, their sort of conclusion on this was that agreeing on standard criteria for diagnosis would be really, 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 really important. And it's probably the first step that we need to take in order to start taking this more seriously. Mm. And it'd be helpful for actually studying it, because obviously the studies that we've done before, because we don't have a standard diagnostic criteria, they've all kind of used their, so there's kind of variation. So even if you were to do a meta-analysis of all of the data that we've got so far, we don't necessarily have one distinct group of people that have misophonia and another distinct group of people that don't. There are slight variations between each study. So if we figure out exactly how we want to diagnose it, then we're that one step forward towards understanding it even more. Mm. And that's misophonia.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, so what do you guys think, huh? Do you feel bad for people that can't be around other people eating anymore?
Oh, yeah, I do feel quite bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to watch my chewing from now on.
Yeah, you guys better watch your chewing. That's exactly why I did this, just as a long, long-winded way.
It's just a big message being like, you chew loudly.
Yeah, I made all this up. It doesn't exist. I just can't stand your chewing gum. I just want to say that actually, on Sunday just past, we had a very, very lovely time celebrating 100 patrons.
We did.
We did, didn't we?
We did a celebratory patron-only live stream. We live streamed to our 100 patrons. And we talked to a few of them. Some of them called in. We had some lovely chats with people. And yeah, we did that for a couple of hours. It was quite nice.
It was a fantastic time. And you know, I really enjoyed that. I feel like we should probably do that again at some point, guys, don't you?
Yeah, it would be nice to do that again at some point.
It would be nice. Well, do you know what? I feel like...
ASAP.
We're very close to 10,000 subscribers on YouTube.
We are. What are we at? So we're at 9-point-something right
9,443 at the time of recording.
At the time of recording.
So I think, and I'm just going to bring this to you guys without actually talking to you about it beforehand at all. I think it'd be a great idea if we did another celebratory live stream for everyone when we hit 10,000 subscribers on YouTube.
A 10,000 subscriber special live stream.
That's true. Yeah. And if you're a patron, you can call in to that live stream. So everyone will be able to watch it, but patrons, you'll be able to call in and join in the fun. So if you want to be a patron and make sure you get the chance to call in, you can head over to patreon.com/SciGuys where you'll get that and a lot of other things. What else will they get, guys?
Well, there's bonus episodes there. They go up every month. It's a whole extra episode every single month. Imagine
Suggest
that.
Suggest and vote on topics for the show.
You'll also get to have access to every single SciGuys Live ever.
Every single one. Every also, single one. Early access. We recently put up some early access to a new series.
Yeah, so actually, if you've seen the new SciGuys Y series and you've thought it was quite good, then you should really join Patreon because you could have seen that weeks ago.
Yeah, there's early access stuff that goes up, and there's also some bonus clips and episodes that don't make the cut. You know,
not because they're not good enough, because they're too good.
Because they're too good.
They blow your heads. Only for patrons. Your heads off. No, really, they're probably my favorite parts of the episodes. So yeah, head over to Patreon, sign up, and make sure that we get to 10K as soon as possible, and we'll do another stream. And hey, do you know, if we hit 150 patrons, which we're actually not that far away from, we'll also do a stream. So whichever one comes first.
Wow.
Yeah.
So much streaming.
Yeah. Wow, we'll be streaming all the time. But don't forget, we're also doing SciGuys Live every second Sunday. I was going to say every single Sunday. Every second Sunday on our YouTube channel. So check that out too. Is that all we've got, guys?
The next stream is on October 18th.
Well, I do have one more thing that I want to add. We've got a lovely little Discord. We've got some special areas for our patrons.
We do. We've got a nice little Discord community going, yeah.
We do, yeah. But don't worry, you don't need to be a patron to get in. You can go to the Discord link, which will be in the description, and you can have fun over there. Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I am Jamkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.